Today is Monday, June 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
There were demonstrators trying to stay overnight outside the Legislative Council, or you call it LegCo, in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong will proceed with its controversial plan to allow people to be extradited to mainland China to face charges. We'll have more on this story coming up. Also ahead, gunfire caused panic in the streets of downtown Port-au-Prince yesterday as thousands of Haitians protested against government corruption. And President Donald Trump says the U.S. has signed what he called another very important part of the immigration and security deal with Mexico. It's all on today's International Edition. Hong Kong will proceed with its controversial plan to allow people to be extradited to mainland China to face charges even after a massive protest yesterday at the city's top leaders. As saying, estimates of the size of the protest crowds vary between a few hundred thousand and a million. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam told reporters that she and her team have not ignored any views expressed on this very important piece of legislation, but thought it was important to push forward regardless. She says, "We have been listening and listening very attentively and very humbly to views expressed by various sectors," she told reporters, adding that the government had made several changes to the bill following public criticism. Well, for more insight into developments, I spoke with VOA Cantonese service reporter Raymond Yam.
You probably see it has come down because the government already cleared the... There were demonstrators trying to stay overnight outside the Legislative Council, or you call it LegCo, in Hong Kong. But however, there will be the legislative session on this coming Wednesday in the morning. It will be the second reading according to the schedule for this bill. And the organizer already calling for more people participate and surrounding the LegCo building on Wednesday for their protests. But I'm not sure how big it will be. As you may know, nobody predicted that it will be more than a million yesterday participating in Hong Kong.
What is the real fear behind this proposed extradition law?
As you may know, Hong Kong has followed the British rule and still following the British judicial system or copy it. China is a totally different scenario. China is not just for the different legal system, but people are quite skeptical about how fair for the trial is. As you may hear, that the government official always said that the court or everything in China is serving the Communist Party for their main purpose. So people are worried about, are there any fair trial or independent trial? And also, you may also hear there were lots of the disputes related with the businessmen in China, no matter where you come from. And people are worried that if there is bogus charges against them, there will be no way for them to defend themselves. At the same time, when the bogus charges send it to Hong Kong, the Hong Kong court or the law authority in Hong Kong, they only check the evidence or the so-called evidence come from China, and there's no other rights or the other decision that the Hong Kong court can do the judgment to decide is this evidence fake or this is genuine evidence against this person, so that this person will be eligible extradite to mainland China. And this is what people worry, that for bogus charges, they might be indicted or they might be extradited to mainland China without any appeal structure or the system.
Now, also, Carrie Lam, she has vowed to go ahead and push ahead with this bill despite all of the protests. And as you mentioned, this was the largest demonstration seen there in years. So what is her position, and really, do you think she will be forced to resign?
This is a very tricky question. And of course, when Carrie Lam elected 2 years ago, at the speech she claimed that if the majority of the people in Hong Kong believe that she's no longer eligible or she's no longer handled the situation in Hong Kong, she'll resign. However, in this scenario, we see Carrie Lam was standing very firm, and seems like she got a blessing from Beijing in order to persuade this law, try to pass it in the LegCo. So this is a lot of uncertainty. It may or may not repeat the same scenario that the first chief executive, Mr. Tung Chee Hwa, resigned because of the pressure of the people. But in this scenario, as you may also see, the recent situation in China, the Chinese President Xi Jinping is very active, very aggressive in no matter domestic or the international issues. So Carrie Lam probably got the blessing or maybe backup from Beijing, and she probably can hang out for a little bit while. I would say that's uncertain.
Also, what can we expect to see just in the few days ahead?
You definitely will see there will be another demonstration outside the Legislative Council building on Wednesday. How does it turn out? Will it turn out green? Nobody knows. It could be or it could be not. There's a lot of uncertainties around here, so it's difficult to say.
That was VOA Cantonese service reporter Raymond Yam. Well, gunfire caused panic in the streets of downtown Port-au-Prince yesterday, and at least one person was reported killed as thousands of Haitians protested against government corruption. The protesters were demanding President Jovenel Moïse's resignation over allegations of fraud and mismanagement of government funds. They vowed to remain in the streets until their demands are met. Protesters were able to get within 50 meters of Moïse's private residence located in a suburb of the capital. Police prevented protesters from getting any closer and posted additional officers in front of the president's home. Members of the National Police Force, PNH, prevented further damage. Well, for more insight into these protests and what is going on there in Haiti, joining me live in the studio is VOA Sandra Lemaire. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Sandra, first of all, why are the people protesting? What are their demands?
They're basically asking for the president to resign because they are tired of corruption. And the really broad theme of these protests is Petro-Caribe. Petro-Caribe is an oil alliance that Haiti signed with Venezuela. A lot of other Caribbean countries are also part of this alliance. Haiti entered into it in 2007, and the basics of this alliance was that Venezuela would sell Haiti oil at a discounted rate. Haiti would resell the oil to people, private citizens on the market, and the money, the revenue that they got from that, they would use for projects for infrastructure and education and social projects, etc. What happened is that they made several billions of dollars in revenue, between 3.8 and 4.2 billion is what has been said. And the money disappeared because the people, government officials who somehow got contracts to do these social projects and infrastructure things, took the money and didn't really deliver on what they said that they would. So an audit was done by a government institution charged with this. And in the audit, they found all of these instances of fraud and mismanagement of funds, etc. Implicated amongst this report, which has been done several times, but the latest one came out about 2 weeks ago on May 31st, it was handed to the Senate, and implicated in it is the former president, Michel Martelly, and the current president, Jovenel Moïse. And so people are furious that the president is sitting in the palace and has committed, allegedly, fraud. They claim that he has two companies and that both companies basically bid on a contract and that it was paid twice for the same project and that the project really wasn't finished. So people are in the streets because they're hungry. Inflation is really high. They said that they're miserable and they are furious that they are victimized by their government.
Also, what are your sources saying that in terms of how long this is going to go on? How long will the protest go on?
Well, the protesters that VOA Creole spoke with yesterday said that we're out here for good until, our demands are met. So today, for example, there are protesters again in the streets of Port-au-Prince. But from the information I've seen from the reporters in Haiti and other towns, more rural towns outside of the capital, things are more calm and sort of getting back to normal. So the answer to your question is, it's hard to tell right now because a lot of times critics will say that, you know, people are given money by some of the opposition parties to go out into the streets and protest, and so that motivates them to go. But a lot of the people VOA Creole was speaking to yesterday were saying, you know, we have nothing to lose. So we're out here and we want to protest because this is wrong. And, you know, we want a better life. We're fed up and we're not going to take it anymore.
Okay. Thank you so much. That is VOA writer and editor Sandra Lemire. Thank you so much, Sandra, for joining us.
Thank you.
Among the top stories in the world, an Indian court sentences three men to life imprisonment for the brutal rape and murder of an 8-year-old girl in Indian Kashmir in a case that sparked nationwide outrage. Three of Russia's leading newspapers published identical front pages of questioning the motives behind the arrest of investigative reporter Ivan Golunov, who was injured while in police custody. And Moldova plunges deeper into political crisis after the Constitutional Court stripped pro-Russian President Igor Dodon of his power over his failure to form a new government. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. Well, President Donald Trump says the U.S. has signed what he called another very important part of the immigration and security deal with Mexico without revealing any details about its contents. He signaled today on the CNBC network that it was another powerful tool to control the surge of Central American migrants headed to the U.S., something the U.S. has been trying to get from Mexico for 20 years. He said U.S. and Mexican negotiators purposely agreed not to disclose the specific terms for the time being. Trump said the provision needs to be approved by Mexico's Congress. Republican colleagues of Trump in Congress have praised the president for concluding the deal, but opposition Democrats have criticized it as not containing much that is new. Well, hundreds of African migrants have been arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border within the past week, attempting unauthorized crossings into Texas. Children account for at least half of these migrants. Raul Ortiz is chief patrol officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection for the Del Rio sector. His agents patrol 210 miles along the Rio Grande and have apprehended 35,000 people trying to illegally enter the U.S. He says of those, 20,000 were either unaccompanied children or families. VOA's Carol Ginsburg spoke with Raul Ortiz about why African migrants are showing up at the border and what happens to them when they arrive.
Yeah, some of the, you know, push and pull factors that we've experienced across the southwest border certainly have to do with, economic drivers. Certainly in some of the countries out of the continent of Africa have experienced some political dynamics, I think, associated with the Ebola outbreak there. And so we have seen, especially in this sector, a significant increase of folks trying to cross illegally in between the ports of entry here in Eagle Pass and in Del Rio, Texas, which are our two highest trafficked areas in the sector.
Is that typically the case? Are those typically the most highest trafficked areas?
So the areas, yes. And then for us, what we have traditionally seen are folks from Central America. We see an awful lot of individuals from Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and then, of course, Mexican nationals that are crossing illegally. But over the probably the last 3 or 4 months, we've seen an increase of folks from the continent of Africa, and they range from Angola, Cameroon, Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Somalia. And so this continues to be something that is awfully concerning for us.
Do you have an idea why the increase is happening now?
So one of the things we do know is that these folks have been traveling for some time, between 4 and 6 months, most of them. and they have traveled to different locations, to Laredo, Texas, some even as far as California, and then for whatever reason, whether it was the cartels or a smuggling organization, have pushed them into our area of responsibility, and so we're starting to encounter them in and around the river country that we are patrolling.
What particular challenges does your agency face when you encounter big groups, or particularly when you're apprehending someone who might speak a language that's less familiar to your agents?
Yeah, so fortunately, some of these folks have been in Mexico, Ecuador, Peru, Brazil, you name it. And so they have picked up a bit of the culture and even some of the language. And so when we encounter them, you know, quite often they speak French or Portuguese, and we are able to get some interpreters in there relatively quick. But certainly from a demographic standpoint, you know, we've been encountering family units quite a bit across the southwest border. In fact, our main numbers came out just a couple of days ago, 132,000 apprehensions for May and along the southwest border. But family units from the African countries is something we weren't familiar with, and so it certainly has exposed us to a different dynamic, and our agents have adjusted well.
I'm just curious, when a person is discovered trying to make an unauthorized border crossing or presents himself or herself to authorities, what happens then? What's the process?
So typically what we try and do is we try and evaluate whether, you know, there are any medical conditions that would warrant us either taking them to a medical facility or getting them some sort of medical help immediately. If that is not the case, we have set up what we call centralized processing centers across the entire southwest border, and we take them into custody, and we start really what it comes down to is a processing or an evaluation to determine what type of immigration proceeding or whether they have a criminal record or whether they have some sort of benefit to some immigration relief here in the United States. Quite often, some of these folks will claim credible fear or a fear of returning to their home country, and that puts them on a path to an immigration hearing before an immigration judge. And so, you know, this is really what we're experiencing across the entire southwest border, and almost all of the nine sectors that represent the Border Patrol have seen a significant increase in FAMA units. And what has happened is, I think the word's gotten out that if you come to the United States with a child, chances are you're going to be set free and set up for an immigration hearing at a later date and time.
That was VOA's Carol Guinsberg speaking with Raul Ortiz with the U.S. Border and Customs Protection. This is VOA's International Edition.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
U.S. Treasury Chief Steven Mnuchin said yesterday President Trump would be perfectly happy to tax more imports from China if he cannot reach a deal with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Both presidents are scheduled to meet later this month at the Group of 20 meeting in Japan. Trump has already imposed tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods, but now is thinking about taxing an additional $325 billion worth of Chinese products. That would include nearly everything China exports to the U.S. The world's two biggest economies have sparred for months over a trade deal, but have not been able to reach an agreement. Well, VOA Asia's Iron Melman spoke with Alan Deardorff, professor of international economics and public policy at the University of Michigan. He first asked if he believes the threat will get China to relent to U.S. demands.
Trump obviously believes it. Trump has had, he thinks or will say, some success using tariffs to press leaders of other countries to make concessions that they didn't want to make. Now, it's clear that Xi Jinping doesn't want to make all of the concessions that we are asking of him. In any negotiation, presumably, the outcome is going to be that he will give in somewhat, and we will give in somewhat if they get an agreement. But it's going to be kind of hidden from view whether how much he gives in. Almost certainly, if they do get a deal, Trump will say, he capitulated. And Xi Jinping will say, no, he did not. But that's the way these things go. So how much he will actually do, I have no idea. There were some things, certainly, that we were asking of China that they knew were in their interest to do, things like doing a better job with intellectual property and that sort of thing. But I presume they've already made those promises. So the promises that they are said by the U.S. to be backtracking on presumably have more to do with subsidies to state-owned enterprises. I don't think they want to weaken their state-owned enterprises. But if they can find a way to satisfy us while not unduly weakening them, then I think they will do it.
How much room on either side, or both sides for that matter, are they willing to compromise and to move closer to each other?
From what I understand, on our dealings with Mexico, Trump insists that he got a deal from them, that they gave in to what he was demanding. And therefore, he's saying this is a success for him. But at least the New York Times is saying most of what they gave him, they had given him earlier. So I'm not sure there needs to be a real gap. It's just a matter of spinning whatever they come up with and claiming that it is a win. My guess is he'll be able to do that with China as well. The problem is, it is absolutely true that Trump loves using tariffs more than probably anybody else in our government, except maybe Mr. Peter Navarro. So it is true that he will go ahead with the tariffs if he can't at least claim to have a victory here.
The threat comes as the G20 finance ministers have been meeting in Japan. And they came out with a communique that said trade and geopolitical conflicts are risking global economic growth, but at the U.S. insistence, dropped a call to recognize the pressing need to resolve trade tensions. What could this kind of relationship lead to in the ongoing international trade between the United States and its Asian allies?
Well, we haven't done much with any of the other Asian allies, or any of the other Asian countries, in particular with Japan. We are negotiating a free trade agreement with them, and as usual, I think pushing them for things that they might be not willing to do and so forth. But I don't see any sign yet that we're going to do things that will be harmful to the other Asian economies than China. Indeed, they stand to some extent to benefit if we put tariffs on China. So at least some products will move and some manufacturing will move to those other countries.
That was VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Alan Deardorff, professor of international economics and public policy at the University of Michigan. While Sudanese police fired tear gas to disperse protesters in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, during a civil disobedience campaign to demand civilian rule. The Sudanese Professionals Association, which led the demonstrations on Sunday that spurred the army to topple President Omar al-Bashir, said the civil disobedience campaign would continue until the military council ceded power to civilians. At least four protesters were reported killed. Protesters built roadblocks with tree trunks, tires, and rocks in the capital's northern Bahari district. Markets and shops are closed in different towns and cities. Opposition and protest groups urged workers to stay at home after security forces stormed a protest camp last Monday. At least 113 people have been killed since then. Doctors close to the protesters said the Sudanese health ministry put the death toll at 61. Though many rounds of negotiations between protest leaders and the military have taken place, talks broke down in mid-May. The AU has suspended Sudan from all activities until a civilian-led government is formed. Well, you've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.